pay-per-view, of course.
Time for another drink.
Nooner.
Yeah, let's get it.
Completely just threw you off. I'm sorry. I should have.
Okay, OnlyFans, go.
Listeners, it's your boy Mopis, and we've got Charlie and Gary back in the mix for episode 10 of Not to Be Technical, our 12th recorded episode, of course. Not to be confused with whatever you might be confused by.
I love that you did not get confused this time, and it definitely has nothing to do with the very clear label I put on our agenda that we're all looking at right now.
Show notes are looking hot.
Yeah, because some people get confused, not us. But today's main topic, of course, is going to be actually how to get into budget tracking in a very easy way. So there's a lot of different ways to do it, but a specific app, a specific method to do it if you haven't done it before, an easy way that we've used, or at least myself personally, I know Nafis knows about it as well. I think more importantly, Nafis, how the hell are you?
Wasn't prepared.
That was so ingenuine.
It wasn't genuine. I'm so prepared for these questions these days. I've been thinking more about fitness, especially since now my knee is getting back to normal and I'm kind of like ready to get back into lifting. Had a good workout earlier this week. And what I realized is I really neglected legs for like most of this year. You know, I've gone on runs, I've done a few things, but I've just completely neglected it. And it's always really strange because like legs is usually the first way I get back into lifting. It's like a lot of squats, deadlifts, that sort of like, you know, routine. And I've just completely skipped it this year. So I'm kind of motivated to kind of get back to weightlifting and doing that thing.
I skipped a lot of leg days this year as well, Naf. So I'm right there with you.
I couldn't tell.
When it comes to leg day, so Nafis and I, we work out together. I have a lot to thank for Nafis in terms of teaching me fitness, getting me into a good routine. You know, we've gotten busy as well. So we started condensing our workouts. And one of the things we started is like, you know, we're just going to start doing legs separately. Like, because I cycle all the time and it's like, you know, you're doing enough legs that way. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I'll just keep doing my leg routine. Ever since that, I don't think you've worked out once. Is that correct?
Didn't do shit.
Yeah. Like, that was like what, like
twice,
4 months ago?
Max. Yeah.
Yeah. Something
more
like
than that,
that
probably.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah, so I get that. There's always time. You know, you can get back into legs. You can start cycling with me. Yeah.
I think that was one of the more recent workouts. I got Peloton shoes or just like, I guess, like generic cycling shoes to use on a Peloton. And quite frankly, my mother actually used them more on Charlie's Peloton while he was out of town than I did.
What, you and your mom share the same shoes too?
Oh yeah, she fit into them. Also, like so we're at Charlie's house, and what I kept doing while my mom's working out is I tried to like, you know, Charlie's got all these smart lights in his house, so I just kept telling Alexa to change the lights colors to like make it feel like Cycle Bar.
That's good. I like that. I do that.
It does emulate it. It's not the same, but
I do remember. Yeah. I think I went to Cycle Bar with you once, Charlie. You took me there. I had like a free. They give out like a free trial to everyone, and I couldn't figure out the shoes to save my life. I remember that. It was like a big struggle for me.
Oh, dude, I wear the women's shoes every time because I don't fit the male ones. They don't have my size, like, real talk.
So, Gary, I was actually just telling a Cycle Bar instructor a story about you and your wife when we first went to Cycle Bar, the one in Boca Raton, where I remember, so we did the workout. It was with a gentleman named Carlos, who was very spunky, this Carlos instructor. I remember he would have a lot of Spanish phrases. He would slap his buttocks. And say like, something to the effect of dale or
so formal.
Honestly, I feel like that would motivate me.
It wasn't a bad class. Carlos actually used to teach at LA Fitness as well, so I used to go there before Cycle Bar. They had
wait, is that the same Carlos that you brought me to? There was like a that wasn't him.
That was Kevin. That was
Kevin.
Oh, Kevin was the great. That was another fitness
you remember
one, right?
Kevin?
Kevin. Kind of like a drill sergeant, but in a nice way. I don't know how to describe
very
it.
Very nice. He had some bangers, too.
he had soundtracks is immediately what I thought of. Like, songs that I would not think he would play. I'm trying to remember one of them. I feel like you know what it is, Charlie.
Well, what he told us is, like, so this was, like, at least 10 months after this song was, like, huge and on the radio. But he's like, guys, this is my favorite song. This is, like, my song right now. And we're like, what's this song going to be, Kevin? Like, yeah, I probably no one was that excited, but I'm playing it for the story. And then Kevin's like, all right, he plays it. It's just Bad Guy by Billie Eilish. Like well past like it being released. He's like, oh, this is my song right now.
He's up on shit.
Like, what the hell, man? Like, he's
like, I probably got hyped up. I probably cranked up the gears a little bit there.
Especially then too. I was listening to myself. But the story I was telling the cycle bar instructor was, brought my friend and his wife to cycle bar for the first time. And your wife, they have these little like accessories. Like if anyone needs maybe a hair tie, maybe if they need earplugs, for example, there's just little things you can grab. Okay. Yeah, maybe the music's too loud for some people, you know, like it's you're in cycle bar, like the music is loud. Yeah, it's, I remember your wife, Gary, there was a jar and they looked like little candies. And she went in there, she took one of the earplugs, and she popped that bad boy in her mouth and started chewing it. And she immediately realized, and she's like, what is this?
Didn't take her that long.
Didn't take her that long. I hope she does. I hope she doesn't feel like sharing this.
You want a little sugar pick me up, you know, before the workout. So,
you know, just a little something, you know, just it's. No,
you know what's funny is actually
that I literally just told that story. Like,
that reminds me. That kind of reminds me of a story from our wedding in Peru. So we got married in Lima because a bunch of her extended family is down there. All the way up to the wedding, I was basically drinking whiskey. I was drinking this special bourbon that I had brought from the States. So I was a little bit parched when I walked up to the front of the aisle there at the beginning of the ceremony. And there was a bottle of water sitting right there. What I didn't realize was this bottle of water was specifically there to be used as holy water.
Because, I was going to say some sacred water for sure.
Because I was...
But like, because this bottle, is it like Zephyr Hills, like the logo on it? Like,
yeah, it's like a regular bottle of water and it's cold. It's staring, like it's like got the sweat dripping down a little bit. Like it's a great looking bottle of water for...
Doesn't sound holy to me.
I didn't think it was holy water because it was kind of on like our side of the table too. But I reached for it to try to like take a swig before the ceremony and she's like slapped my hand like, stop that. That's the holy water, you asshole. Stop it. That's a little bit more embarrassing than chewing the earplug, but yeah, that's.
I mean, imagine you drink the holy water, though, man.
I didn't actually drink it, but I did get baptized that day, apparently. So there's a record of me being baptized and married in Peru. So yeah.
Hell yeah. You know, both aren't that embarrassing, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't actually go through with drinking it, but it was.
It's not like your wife ate the earplug.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I might not even tell the story. But Gary, we're really glad to have you back on the podcast. You know, we've had a lot of things going on with us, but we're back here. Anonymous listener number one. He gave you a lot of shit for not being on the last one. Did you listen to the last one? And the one other stat that I'll give you before getting your answer here is, you know what? The last episode, episode 9, our 11th recorded episode, some people say it was our worst one yet, and you weren't on it. And that's
that right?
The theme. That is right. So
I don't think input. I enjoyed it. I listened to it all the way through and I thought it was really good. I enjoyed the edgy comments that anonymous listener number one always brings. He's, you know, talking about Ken Bone pregnancy porn on Reddit and stuff like that. So that was out of left field. I enjoyed the whole discussion on Reddit. I thought it was pretty comprehensive. So yeah, I thought it was a good episode personally.
Well, yeah, that's great to hear. Some people like anonymous listener number two, not to call out anyone specifically, but texted us and said that they had a hard time getting through it. It was our worst one yet. And some other people said maybe it wasn't good, but you know, it's good feedback. It's good feedback.
I don't blame that anonymous listener.
You know what? The vibes are off because we didn't have Gary and we got Gary now. The vibes are off.
I'm not so sure about that.
I'm so sure.
I was going to say, I do have an update from the previous episode to that one that I was on. I believe it was the crypto episode.
Your episode, your takeover episode.
Yeah, before we talked about crypto, we were talking about Harry Potter movies.
That's correct.
I wanted to share an update with you guys. And first of all, I want to ask you guys, each of you, so there's 8 Harry Potter movies in total, right?
That's my understanding. Yeah.
I want each of you to guess how many Harry Potter movies that I have watched since that episode 2 weeks ago.
4.
Wow.
Charlie?
Well, I know for sure one because you texted us after watching the first movie, and you had some hot takes regarding Dumbledore. But I would say,
I don't remember that. What hot takes did I have?
You were like, I can't believe at the end Dumbledore gave 4 points to Gryffindor.
No, I was happy that he did. Okay,
yeah, well, I know, it was a joke.
Spoiler. I love Dumbledore. Spoilers, by the way.
My bad, guys. Dumbledore was definitely a little generous to Harry Potter and the crew.
No, Dumbledore is a boss.
I would guess, man, I want to say 3, but like the way you prefaced this just makes it seem like it's more. But I'm going to say 3.
I feel like 3 is a good answer.
I watched 5.
Damn it, I was about to say 5, dude. I was so close to saying 5.
I shouldn't have prefaced it so strongly. I should have just like come in a little more low-key with it. But
if I recall, on episode 8, you're like, I can't promise I'm going to watch a single episode. You know,
I'll be honest with you. At that time, I had no intention of watching it. I kind of got sucked in because Tati's listened to, I'm sorry, my wife listened to the podcast and was like, hey, what the hell is this? Like, you talked to your buddies and you agreed to watch Harry Potter? Like, you never before agreed to watch Harry Potter with me. Like, but then you're on the podcast and then you agree to it. So like at that point, I just felt like I had to
go.
This reminds me of another complaint she has with you and your buddies, which you already know what I'm going to say, Gary.
Yes.
Which is when we go to the beach, when you're at the beach with your buds, you know, it's you want to just do activities, you know, like we'll throw the old pigskin around over in the water. We got these little like Nerf balls, like we're whatever activities Classic. You have, frisbees, volleyball, you know, when you're with your buds, it's great. But her complaint, and correct me if I'm wrong, Gary, is when you both go to the beach, which you do often, you guys always are going to the beach, you don't like to do those activities. You need your buds for those activities. So I feel like it's a similar complaint here with the Harry Potter. She's like,
it is kind of similar.
Yeah.
It is kind of similar. I feel like that's not an uncommon thing, though, in relationships. Yeah. Like, you kind of need outside assurance on certain things, you know, or to do certain activities.
I mean, I don't know if I'm out of place here, but like my first thought is like sometimes you want to do those activities with someone else. You know what I mean? It's almost like you enjoy them more with someone.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to paint her off as getting upset about this because she's not. It's more of a jokey thing. She's like, what the hell, Gary? Like, I want to do that too. Yeah. It's not like that.
I was going to say, I think it's more of like a chill like experience for me. Like when we just go, the two of us, like I just want to, you know, like lay down on the beach and have a drink and just chill. Whereas like when we go with a bunch of people, like, okay, let's do something. Let's get a little stupid game. Like, you know, the ones where like the ball like sticks to the little, you know, catcher's mitt thing, like the Velcro ball. You know what I'm talking about? That's a great one.
Exactly. Classic. That's a good one. Yeah. Same goes with pools too. We'd have you guys over and go with the pools, and we would be like playing with the same games and stuff like that. It's there's just something different about it. You got your buds, you're doing
different
that.
Different vibe.
But I have a Harry Potter update for you. So we've run so far 2 polls since launching the podcast on Instagram. 2 polls. The first one was after our episode where we talked about food quite a bit. Shake Shack and BurgerFi came up. So we ran a poll just to give those results very late to the audience here. 65% of people voted for Shake Shack, while 35% voted for BurgerFi. I will have you know that we got a lot of comments in person, text messages, emails, written postcards telling us that they would have voted for BurgerFi after the fact. But, you know, a lot of these BurgerFi people, they're just busier. You know, they got lots going on in their lives, you know, but they know when they want to get a burger that's kind of in this tier, they're going to go to BurgerFi, but they just didn't see the poll at that time. So I do want to let everyone know that those numbers are a little skewed. You know, it's a little skewed there, but, you know, it was 65% Shake Shack. That was the data, but, you know, it is what it is.
I'll count that as a dubski.
You can, that's fine. But the poll that I'm more interested in that's much more relevant right now is, before you had even watched Harry Potter, we asked our audience which Hogwarts house you would most likely be. So I think Nafis and I agree that you'd be Gryffindor on the podcast when we were talking about it. I didn't want to say Hufflepuff just as a joke. I respect you. I didn't want to throw you in there.
I don't know why. Is Hufflepuff bad? I mean, I've watched 5 of them now, and I don't think there's anything like embarrassing about Hufflepuff.
Well, tell me one good thing about Hufflepuff. Tell me one memorable, notable thing.
So the handsome... Okay, so first of all, spoiler alert. First of all, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't watched these movies and was, 20 years behind like me, just going in. Might want to skip forward if you haven't watched Harry Potter. But anyway, the handsome guy who ended up being in Twilight. I can't remember his name.
Edward Cullen, our boy.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
We cannot Robert Patterson. That's
he,
his name.
So he ended up dying, I believe, in the fourth one. And he was... part of Hufflepuff, right?
He was Hufflepuff.
And this was
that's
something that was
claim to fame.
This was something that was a little bit disappointing watching the movies, and maybe there's more info in the last three that I haven't seen, but I feel like it's all about Gryffindor and Slytherin. Like, I don't even know shit about Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw, you know? So I was a little disappointed in that. I wanted more of a backstory for those ones.
I'd say you're right in terms of the lack of focus on some of the prominent characters. I believe for a portion of the series, doesn't Mr. Harry have a little crush on a Ravenclaw gal?
That's another thing I was going to mention. I believe her name is Cho, and that's his love interest. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
That was actually pretty heartbreaking for my wife in episode 5, because she previously had been on Team Harry Hermione. And she thought that they made a better match than Ron and Hermione.
Wait, who, episode 5 of the podcast or
movie number five? No, movie number 5.
Because episode 5 of the podcast, we went over John McAfee again.
I do not want to go back to that.
I wasn't sure if your wife was torn up on that.
No, I do not want to go back to that. Yeah.
Okay.
Harry Potter number 5. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So Hermione totally friend zoned him. She was like, oh, hey, that girl was like looking at you like, she was giving you the eyes, and it was like at that moment you knew, you know, it wasn't going to happen between them. And then later the kiss scene. I mean, my God, you know.
My God is
like
right.
The mistletoe. I mean, oh my God.
But you know who Harry eventually ends up with at the end, right?
So don't spoil anything for me because there could be a big twist. I don't know. But I think Ron and Hermione end up together, I think.
It's Dumbledore.
Noffis.
It's, did you say it's Dumbledore?
what the fuck, man?
There's a lot we're not going to go down that path with Dumbledore, but look it up. But anyways.
That might be a good Reddit search for you later.
Yeah, that's the update with Harry Potter. I'm glad that you were watching it.
Wait, so who won the poll? Well,
yeah,
again?
You didn't even tell them the poll.
Yeah, I think we only got through one of them.
you threw me off with that Dumbledore comment.
Sorry.
I sidetracked. All right, so here's what the audience said, Gary. So 7% of our listeners that voted put Slytherin, which is surprising. You don't strike me as Slytherin at all. Yeah. At all. Hufflepuff, 20%. That's a decent amount, 20%, you know, fifth of all voters. Now we got Gryffindor at 33%. But the majority of the audience has you pegged in with us. Noffis and I, we got this when we took the test. Ravenclaw, that's 40% of listeners think you're also Ravenclaw.
That's very interesting. I don't know if there's some more info or light that's shed about Ravenclaw in the final three films, but as of now, it seems like the most boring house out of all of them.
I feel like it's the most, you know, not to be cocky, intelligent house. Would you say that? If there was a technical house, it would be Ravenclaw, right?
Yeah, it'd be them. Yeah. You know, I would say finding out that Gary's a part of Ravenclaw is the only reason why I've felt any pride towards also being deemed in Ravenclaw. I'm still disappointed, don't get me wrong, but...
Yeah, obviously I really want to be Slytherin, and it never get out. But
you wanted to be Slytherin?
Oh, hell yeah,
we pledged, it just didn't work out.
Snakes are cool, man.
Yeah, but they're jerks. Like, they're like the rich kids, you know? Like, they're like the in crowd and they just look down on everyone else.
Well, Noffis and I are kind of assholes, man.
Yeah.
I don't see you guys like that.
Thank you. But
yeah.
I don't know.
Gary, one day we'll be rich.
You're
okay?
Not cool. You're not cool or rich. So, no. No Slytherin for you.
I think one of the next updates here. So I love that we got a Harry Potter update when we weren't expecting it. But I think on one of our next episodes, we'll need you to take the actual test, confirm that you are Ravenclaw, like our audience thinks. And so we'll have more to come there. But the other thing I do want to update on and circle back to is some marketing updates about the podcast, right? So on a few episodes ago, I talked about how we were going to follow people that have the same name as us, right? So the same complete name. So Gary Mann's, Charlie Scholes's, Nafis Ahmed's, right?
Genius tactic.
There weren't a ton of them, so it didn't take a lot of time. You know, I followed them. I sent them messages. Nafis also helped engage with some of them as well on there.
So what was like the, like, just like a rough like idea, like who, how many, like, or what was the most amount of, like, I don't know, our doppelgangers?
You. There are plenty of Nafis Ahmeds out there, my man. That took a little bit more time. And so out of everyone, we got one Nafis Ahmed to follow us back.
He's out here.
One Nafis Ahmed. And shout out to him. He was liking our post. He might have listened. I don't know. The Gary Manns were the least responsive. They wanted no business with us whatsoever.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
The ones with my name, they were kind of like the Gary Manns, you know, but there were, I got a few messages back. Like, oh, cool, I'll check it out, you know, but like that was it.
I like that.
Yeah. It was pretty much just my dad, since he has the same name as me. No, I'm just kidding. He already listens. He's a long time.
Okay, so basically that was a flop then. We need to come up with another marketing strategy.
Yeah, so we need a new marketing strategy. Right now it's been Twitter. So we did mention in our last podcast, you can follow us on Twitter @NotToBeTech. You can't fit the whole name there. So NotToBeTech, cut off after the four letters there. But on Twitter, we've been sharing the podcast with people and we're getting some traction there. So this is a new marketing channel I think is working for us. Instagram's definitely been our bread and butter. Everyone's been engaged with us. We appreciate it. But we'll think of some new marketing tactics and have some updates soon, I think.
Are we what's the over-under on the time frame between us getting a blue check mark on Twitter?
Over-under, I would say 15 years.
15? I was thinking the same timeline. Exactly.
That's it? No, so not no, never no. then.
Wait, well, you know, who knows? These are growing. Actually, the podcast is growing pretty quickly. Like, we are getting a lot of downloads. But those are, I think, our follow-ups for previous episodes, market updates. But I think we should roll right into trending tech. What do you think?
Oh, let's get it.
Yeah, let's.
We're ready to trend.
I think another thing, it actually is kind of a follow-up from our last episode. But to no surprise, as soon as we started talking about Reddit got $700 million the same day we released the episode in new funding. So a lot's going on for them. They've grown a lot in the past 2.5 years. Their valuation has tripled, and they're now valued at $10 billion. They're going to go public soon, or in the future. They haven't given a date yet. But one thing I do think that's very interesting here that we didn't touch on our last episode is Reddit is going to try to incorporate things that are working for other platforms and working quite well for other platforms. And one thing they did was actually buy a platform called Dubsmash. I think it was like a year or two ago. It was TikTok.
It was a little while ago.
And it has short videos. So this past week, they actually announced that they're rolling out a TikTok-like feed, just like Instagram Reels, just like YouTube Shorts, and just like TikTok, of course. And that's going to be something that's going to be pushed on Reddit and start to show up in feeds. So I think it's actually really huge for them. I think the content's going to be creative in nature, maybe a little bit more intelligent and informative. Not that TikTok doesn't have that if you're looking for it. But on Reddit, I think just with that type of target audience, it'll work well for them in the way people consume the content. But what do you think, Nafis? Do you think it's going to work out for them, or do you think it's another clone that might just flop?
Well, I mean, before we jump into that end, I'd say I find it quite a coincidence that so much funding was raised right after our most recent episode.
Unlikely?
I don't think so.
Exactly.
AKA the least popular episode. Is that the one you're referring to?
That is correct. Least popular, but most profitable for Reddit.
Yeah, you know, very profitable. As far as like the actual user feature goes, when it comes to videos, like the only things I've really kind of like came across have been sort of like in the front dashboard where it's just like somebody playing music and they're streaming. And usually there's a lot of like applauses and people are really cheering this person on and they're usually really good. But I don't see too much more video content aside from that. So I think I align with you here, Charlie, where I think like there's going to be very interesting content. Just like it's really based on what the culture of Reddit is and that vibe.
Yeah.
In a sense, very supportive, but also very sarcastic type of people. And I don't know. I find that I think it's going to be super interesting to have a little bit more like accessible video content.
Yeah. And the other thing that they're doing now too, which is new for Reddit and not new for other platforms, which I think is going to work very well for them. So on our last episode, we talked about subreddits we like to follow. and how the user experience is. If you go on Reddit, you make an account, you subscribe to subreddits, you can, you know, curate your own essentially feed of what everything's going to look like, and how powerful that can be, or, you know, customizable, right? But the one limitation that has is it's really making it just so you have complete control on what you see. There's no algorithm that's like, wow, Charlie really likes this type of content. And there's this whole subreddit full of that same type of content that people like Charlie are looking at and loving. And there's nothing that, no discovery feed, no like similar posts, like what Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, everything has. That's changing. So Reddit is actually going to have this instance of a discovery aspect of the Reddit app or the website, where you'll start to see posts that are custom curated for you. So this is a very good thing for the platform and for the users. I'm sure there's ways to disable it and still see your own subreddits and things of that nature. But right now, if something goes trending on Reddit, like it's in like r/all and it's like huge on the front page, that's very hard to achieve. But now let's say you share content and it's really good content, but it's only for like a specific subset of users that would really find it interesting. That might get more traction now because people can discover it like with other platforms.
But I remember with Instagram, I don't think the collections feature of it really had any effect on your discovery at the time. So I used to use the collections and primarily for like fitness related stuff. So I think we discussed it on a previous episode where we talked about, you know, what do we see in our discovery feed?
I remember that. It was a bunch of buff dudes on your discovery feed.
Exactly.
Right?
So when they updated the algorithm, my discovery feed changed completely to just all these dudes working out. And I'm like, okay, I mean, it's a little bit better than what it was before, but also like, this is not the only content I want to see. It just like was this way I was collecting videos in Instagram because there really isn't any other way to do that. And now that that happened, I'm like, oh, great. I like saved some of these videos and now it's like the only feed. So that's why I wonder, is it like upvoting certain things maybe in threads or whatnot? Maybe they'll come out with more info, but
yeah, I'm sure that'll certainly be an indicator, like what the type of stuff that you upvote. And it's also good for advertisers as well, you know, if you're looking at it from that lens. But going back to your discovery feed on Instagram, were any of the gentlemen that were working out that frequent your discovery feed doing legs perhaps over the past 4 to 6 months?
Just upper body, baby.
Oh, just upper body. Wow. So that algorithm really is like custom curated for you.
Okay. Really got me.
No reminders at all to do legs.
I don't know if this, like, so this is my thought on some of this like curation these days. And honestly, a lot of it's just targeted towards Spotify. I don't love it, honestly. Sometimes with a lot of the stuff like Spotify curates for me, is it's just like the same stuff I'd normally listen to. It's just like mixes up my own songs. And I'm like, oh, great. I don't know. I feel like it's not as good as it really could be. You know, to kind of spin it back to Reddit, what I'm hoping Reddit's discovery feed feels like is this website called StumbleUpon. I don't know if you guys have used it before in the past.
It used to be mad popular, StumbleUpon.
Yeah, I've never heard of this. What is this?
You would just like click a button and it would load a new website for you.
Yeah. So you kind of like choose categories of things that you're interested in. And then you click this button that says, you know, Stumble, and it would just bring you to like just very sort of just like out of nowhere pages that you wouldn't have ever found yourself. And this was something I used in high school and I really liked that. And I feel like Reddit gives me that sort of same vibe when I use it. So I'm hoping that it kind of still has that same energy with their discovery feed.
Well, I think it'll be way better than StumbleUpon, because StumbleUpon got really bad at some point. But like, it's a little different now. But
yeah, I don't even know what it's like. I remember I used it one time, maybe in college or after that, and I was like, I don't know, it just didn't feel the same. Maybe I'm just better at the internet. Who knows?
You know, I think one of the reasons why Reddit is really going to be pushing, so not only the AI powered discovery, but really the videos from that platform that they bought. There was a lot of data that was released this past week, actually. So it takes a while, I guess, to aggregate app download data from the previous year. So for 2020, that was the first year that TikTok, for the US and globally as well, took over Facebook for being the most downloaded app. So I have the list right here of the most downloaded apps in the US in 2020. And number one is TikTok. Number two is Facebook Messenger. Number three is Facebook. And number four is Instagram.
Stupid Facebook Messenger.
So Facebook Messenger, they really pushed that. Like, if you want to talk to anyone on Facebook, you got to download this goddamn app.
It's like, I hate that thing. Yeah. But it honestly, I don't even know why I have a Facebook anymore. I really need to delete it. I don't use it at all.
I mean, for me, like, I agree. I don't use it at all. Like, if I update it, it's really just for the people that are still on there. And, like, it's not many. But it's weird. It's weird how, like, there's a resurgence sometimes. There's, like, a Facebook groups and things like that. But I agree with you. I'm never on there anymore. But
I've said this in the past. I've used, again, this is, like, years ago. But, like, in certain groups on Facebook, there's a lot of engagement, you know, there, and it's a platform that so many people have at this point too, that I think that's sort of where it works. Like Messenger, I don't use it often.
A lot of people are using it though. This top five list, or actually the top six downloaded apps in the US last year, four of them are Facebook apps. Messenger, which was number two, Facebook number three, Instagram number four, and then WhatsApp at number six, all Facebook owned.
Oh, I didn't know that was Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't know what? Yeah, WhatsApp is owned by Facebook. Yeah. So that's part of the reason, too, in one of the previous episodes, I think it was one, where we talked about the tracking pixels and the big issues coming from Facebook. They own all those properties. That Facebook pixel powers a lot of things there. So that's exactly why that's such a huge change for advertisers. But TikTok overtook Facebook for the first time. So TikTok is definitely a medium that's continuing to grow. Every platform's copying it. Reels are doing really well on Instagram. YouTube Shorts are actually doing pretty well too, even though I never look at those. So now Reddit's getting in on the game. It makes perfect sense.
What else is on the list, Charlie?
Oh, yeah. So there was more on the top 10 list there after. So just real quickly, the list from 1 to 10 is TikTok, Facebook Messenger, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, WhatsApp, Discord, Pinterest, Twitter, and then Google Duo. And Google Duo is essentially FaceTime for Android users and say,
Android users. I didn't know what that was. Discord, I'm not in the least bit surprised with. And I feel happy about
that. I'm a little surprised. Like, I'm glad to see it's gone up. I mean, with quarantine, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm thinking about. So one for Discord, if you don't know what Discord is, it's like a chat platform. And it's really oriented more towards gamers, at least that's what I would say. And the reason why I think Discord blew up is I feel like it's a younger audience. So when I would go visit my cousins, you know, at their house and they're, you know, in class still, I can see on another screen, they've got Discord pulled up the whole time. And that's where they're chatting with all of their buds. It just feels like maybe like that's like their generation of platform to like go on to like hang out and do whatever they do. And then I think you and I use Discord a little bit, maybe with some people. I think we did this stream of playing, what is it?
Jackbox Party Pack.
Yeah, Jackbox Party Pack.
Among Us is huge on Discord too. When like Among Us blew up, a lot of people on PC were playing that.
Yeah, Discord makes a lot of sense just for like that quarantine vibe. And, you know, when people had a little bit more time, they started playing more video games. And that's sort of just the default chat platform to use while you're playing another game. Because
there's tons of servers too, and it's not just for gaming, even though that's like the kind of the main focus of Discord. So I use Discord actually a lot. There's a few groups I'm in that have to do with kind of like stock tips, cryptocurrency, financial planning. So there's one in particular I use quite a bit. So that's honestly one of the main reasons I get on Discord these days. But not surprising for the US top list to see Discord get on there. But you know what probably would have broke this list in 2020, especially during quarantine, if it were just an app, would be OnlyFans. OnlyFans blew up in 2020 over quarantine. But Novice, I think you were saying that you had a topic about this and like an app they were making, right?
You know, any of our longtime listeners will know that my preferred platform for adult entertainment is pay-per-view, of course. But as many people know,
time for another drink.
Yeah, let's get it. Run it, Charlie.
A nooner.
It's a high noon, baby. Sorry, that completely just threw you off. I'm sorry. I should have.
It's all good. It's all
okay.
Good.
OnlyFans, go.
OnlyFans, yes. So, if you like are aware of the internet at all, you're gonna know what OnlyFans is. It's a platform for really not safe for work content that content providers put on there so that way they can get, you know, subscriptions from users. Really layman's terms, it's just like you know, maybe your neighbor is starting to shoot their own personal porn and you can subscribe to them. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not just limited to really unsavory types of imagery. There's, you know, other content creators that might have cooking classes or videos on there, maybe podcasters or things of that nature. But everyone really knows what the platform is mainly used for.
And those, and I think the people that are you doing more safer work stuff, they're mostly on like Patreon. I think Patreon has become like the main
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which is like, so it's like OnlyFans in functionality and subscription based, but safer work.
Exactly. So just like Charlie was saying, I think I've heard about Patreon mainly through YouTube. And I think it was actually created by someone who used to be like a YouTube musician, wasn't making enough money on YouTube. And essentially what Patreon is a service for is, again, content creators who are trying to make a little bit more money. And really what they're doing is catering to their super fans. It's sort of that 80-20 rule, where the 20% of your like most engaged fans are providing 80% of your revenue. So they've got subscription services that sort of cater to what, you know, their subscriber might be looking for. Maybe it's like personalized content, or it could be, you know, behind the scenes stuff. So Patreon is probably the biggest in that space. There's a few other, you know, companies that do something similar, but Patreon's the one that comes top of mind. Now back to OnlyFans, what they've recently released is an app called OnlyFans TV that you can actually download today. It's on both the App Store and Google Play. And what they're trying to do is, it looks like they're trying to make, you know, at least a little bit of a more safe pivot into the Patreon sort of space, where if you think about OnlyFans, what you immediately think of is not safe for work content, but OnlyFans TV, they're able to create an app because it is focusing on more PG related content.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons too, why you haven't seen OnlyFans previously on the App Store is exactly that they were not allowed to be on there. Otherwise they would have been on there instantly. They'd be getting way more money because it's not safe for work creators. Yeah. They weren't allowing that.
Which I find interesting. Like, this is one of these things, like typically if there's like something like an app for, I would use it. I haven't used OnlyFans before. Again,
sure.
Pay-per-view. So with the OnlyFans platform, like I have no idea what it's like on mobile. Like I'm assuming, like, you know, with mobile use on like the highest rise ever, people are probably on their phone with that. And I wonder if it's like not super like.
This well is a topic anonymous listener number one would thrive with.
He would. I don't have much to add here, unfortunately.
No, me neither. But I do think it's interesting, though, this new app that they're doing, right?
So I think it's a great move, honestly, because yeah. I've made some jokes to my friend who does like fitness videos. So by trade, she's a doctor, but then she makes fitness videos for her friends. And I was like, yeah, honestly, like you can maybe make an OnlyFans or something to put your content on, so you've got a platform to host it. And then maybe if you want to, you know, make some extra money on it, you can start creating subscription plans of some sort. But, you know, again, there's this stigma associated with OnlyFans. Now, with OnlyFans TV, right now, they're not actually paying out their, you know, their creators. It's more of a marketing tool that drives people to the creator's content. Mm-hmm. You know, so more of right now a free base. But I think it's really just sort of like a entry point into the game to like get their feet wet, see really what, you know, the engagement they have, and then maybe provide more service offerings.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that they're trying to pivot there. And the fact right now that it is right now, they only have creators that are pretty big on OnlyFans, but they're kind of just in clothed interviews, like kind of different types of content right now. It's easily their first step into this. Like they're going to open it up. It's definitely going to be Patreon-esque. It'll be interesting to see what they do there and if it's really going to work, or if their bread and butter is just going to be the adult content and the flops, which I think is actually pretty possible. But because this is a mobile application, and the name too does seem a little restrictive, right? So think about it. Like if we were to do a Patreon, right? And like we wanted to have like custom content for like our podcast listeners, right? And we go on, you know, OnlyFans TV, it's like this is all video based. But what if like a lot of our stuff that we wanted to offer to our subscribers isn't video? What if it's like custom perks and call outs and like various little things, which is what a lot of people do from YouTube shows and things like that? Or a podcast could be audio based. So I think it's a little bit more restrictive than Patreon, but it still opens up the door for like video content to be a little bit more unique and exclusive. So it'll be interesting, but it makes sense why they did it.
Yeah. I think it's a good play on their part. It's weird. I think the OnlyFans name is not terrible. I think like the only thing that's tough about it. Yeah. It's like, it's working. It's well known. And it really comes down to if they're going to be able to separate, you know, away from this sort of pornographic sort of stigma with it. Because I mean, like, you know, I want to kind of double back to this joke that anonymous listener number one made for Reddit, where he said that the use for it is the two P's, Pokemon and porn.
His own use at the time of the podcast, right?
Reddit is this massive forum for really anything that exists. And you know, with OnlyFans, if they can maybe get into some sort of space where they have content for anything and everything, it could maybe thrive. Who knows? I'm not, you know, huge. I'm not betting on.
I don't feel like they're going to be able to shake that stigma. I think they should just go all the way with the porn side of it personally. I don't see how they're going to be able to differentiate themselves enough from Patreon, although it could be a good option for people who already do like pornographic stuff on there to kind of show off their hobbies. Like maybe they could have like a cooking class or something like that, or show off.
Well, that's exactly how it's kind of
that's how it's working really right now.
Yeah.
Gary.
So it's people who already do porn on there. And then they're like, oh, hey, I also do this other thing.
The two flagship names that they have there are Mia Khalifa and Bella Thorne, both who have previously or currently do that type of thing. I know Mia Khalifa, like that's behind her or whatever, but like that's, she's definitely known for that. But
like, so, yeah, right. That's not behind her.
I don't know. I don't know what she's up to. But I'm pretty sure it's behind her. I have no idea. But anyways, they're featuring like, you know, unfiltered interviews with them, all clothed, of course, because it's OnlyFans TV. But like that's it. That's like their forte. But I agree with you, Gary. I do think that it's going to be a hard stigma to break, and that
it's a hard stigma to break. But I think what they have going for it is the fact that people know what it is, and I think things are adaptable. To a certain degree, like I don't. So where I think it works over Patreon is that I don't think that many people know what Patreon is in comparison to OnlyFans, right?
That's like, true. That's
a good point.
They have a bigger point. Name. That's right. Yeah, that's a good point. Office, honestly, that is what they have for going for them. It's a bigger name. A lot more people got interested in supporting that type of content rather than their favorite YouTubers that need to make a little more money.
I just feel like when you start off as something, like it's, I don't know of any examples that like a company has like started off as in one lane and then like successfully kind of changed lanes, you know, like
Venmo. I don't know.
What was Venmo before?
Yeah, I can't remember. It was definitely not payment processing. It was it was something else entirely.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely positive.
So you just send little emojis back and forth with no money attached to them?
No, I think the general idea is like the business model was completely different, you know?
I'm thinking about like 4chan because like that's one that was like a very like dark place. And then I think they, you know, started moderating it more, but it still kind of has that stigma for being like, you know, seedy content or whatever. I don't know what you guys think about that.
4chan, I don't know. 4chan's
if that even exists anymore, I don't even know.
Oh, 4chan exists, but I never thought there was anything.
No, because I know there were like, you know, Nazis and stuff on there that I think they... I know too much about this, honestly, because I watched this QAnon documentary on HBO. I don't know if you guys watched that, but they talked about how like 4chan morphed into 8chan and morphed into this other thing where like all these... Nazis and like crazy people were like,
right. So you know what, kudos to you, Nofis, you are right. In 2009 Venmo was launched as a music startup that allowed people to send text to bands that have an MP3 show up in their email. I don't really get what the end of that sentence means, but they can send text.
I feel like that's not a good example though, because nobody, I mean, Charlie and I didn't, I mean, Charlie's pretty plugged in. I'm not, but you had no idea about that. People had no clue about what Venmo was. Everybody knows what OnlyFans is already and they know the lane that they're in. So I feel like it's going to be tougher for them. personally.
I don't disagree with you. You know, it is going to be hard to shake that. Who knows?
I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
I just say that was a fun fact that you did know that, though. So I really do give you props there because I had no clue.
Yeah, I definitely doubted you.
Yeah, I remembered it and then I just couldn't remember exactly what it was. I knew it was something music related, but I didn't want to speak that part out of my ass.
Never doubting you again.
And that name worked. That name worked for that. I don't know if the name worked for that, but when a name can become a verb, like you've done it. Like, hey, I'll Venmo you. Like when you say I'll Cash App you, it just doesn't have the same flow. Like I'll Venmo you. You know?
I'll never forget the memory of like when I remember I heard like that term being used. It was like I had driven up to Philly for my best friend's like 21st birthday, and it was like a hungover brunch that we were having, and like two of his friends were across the table, and they're like, "Oh, I'll cover it. You want to Venmo me?" And I was like, "Excuse me? You're gonna what?"
What are you doing to her?
Yeah, it was like, what is that? And they're like, yeah, you have this thing called Venmo. And I was like, hey, what? This is so cool.
It's free? It's free? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's no bank fees if you wait a couple days.
All the free services, you know what they say. If you don't pay for the product, then you are the product.
You are the product.
Yeah, that's right.
And at that time, I remember distinctly, they did not hide what you were sending to someone in terms of like the payment amount or request amount. So like they would show like financial transactions fully out there public.
Yeah, like if you're sending like your roommate rent, like your rent can easily be found out by all of your friends that are automatically added to your Venmo friends list.
I mean, I think that was part of the fun at that time too. Yeah. It's just kind of like if you're sending rent or something, you're just kind of like, oh yeah, party supplies, you know, like whatever your rent amount is.
Yeah, $500.
Yeah. But is it? That's something that, so was there not an option? Yeah, I know they have an option to do private, like set your transactions to private, but I don't know if it works because I feel like everybody on there, like, wouldn't everybody do private? I don't know. For me, I know I have it set to private.
No, we definitely
don't have mine set to private, but like, I like making funny comments, like, you know, but like, yeah, like if there's something that needs to be private, you can make it private, like on a one use basis, you know, it's.
I guess I just have doubts about if it actually works because I see so many people's transactions on there and I have a hard time believing everybody wants them public.
Everyone wants them public that you're
I guess there. I guess so.
Or they just completely, maybe they don't know, but I think everyone kind of knows. That's kind of why Venmo got so big too. It was like a social way to send money to one another.
Right.
I went out for beers with Mike, like here's your... Yeah. 20 bucks. Well,
so I can give you an example of one of Charlie's more recently. We were at a video game arcade and we were playing Mario Kart and there were some young ladies next to us who are also playing Mario Kart. And you know, they need, you know, they're drunk. They needed some assistance getting some set up. I, you know, kind of
excuse me, ladies, you need some assistance.
He swooped in like Superman. I know how to set up that Nintendo Switch controllers. Cause sometimes the controllers are finicky.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, they are to get them set up.
So got them all set up. They start playing and I had to pass some gas. You know, I was like, you know, this is going to be a silent one. It was silent, but quite deadly. And I remember our friend was just like, man, who farted here? You know, I was like, hey, I'm sorry. That was me, bro.
Wait, did you Venmo the girls as an apology for farting? How does this have to do with Venmo? So am I confused here?
No, you're not confused, Gary. I'm surprised the story was brought up. Essentially, later in the night, I needed to Venmo my friend something, what I wrote in the comment, which was public. And I actually believe, Gary, if I remember correctly, you liked this.
Oh, really?
I wrote, Nophis farted next to females at the glitch bar. And that was
concise.
That's the transaction that everyone can see that's connected to Nophis and myself. I felt like you liked that. I think I remember turning to Nophis and saying, look, Gary liked this. Maybe it wasn't that memorable. Great little tidbit to bring up. I think it's a great example of Venmo.
At first, I thought you Venmoed the girls. I thought you were like, oh my God, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. Let me Venmo you.
Please accept my apologies.
Yeah, take a fiver. Yeah, please.
Compensation.
Yeah, Venmo can be funny. I don't know if that was the best use of it being humorous. But I guess on that note, so I think we should pivot over to kind of the main topic here. Also financial focused, which is, budget tracking. And we had a question come in that was, what's an easy way to get into budget tracking if you're not doing it well or effectively right now, or maybe you're falling behind on it, right? So, you know, aggregating all of your bank statements, whether it's, you know, your credit cards, your debit cards, assets, anything you owe, payments that you're making, you know, into one place, and then creating a budget. Like, well, how do I create a budget? How do I start, you know, taking control of my finances? There's so many ways to do this. Like, we could talk for hours through all the options, but we're going to share a couple specific options here that I think are very easy. A lot of it is focused on a very well-known app called Mint, but I think there's some ways that you might not realize that you can actually evolve that into something a little bit more powerful than Mint, which is what I personally use. But I guess real quickly before we get started there, how well-versed are you guys with budget tracking? Do you have a system right now? What do you use to make that easier or do this yourself?
This is probably one of my favorite parts of like my friendship with Charlie and how we probably fostered this friendship is like where one of us will start some sort of routine or habit, we'd share it with each other and be like, oh, this is something I did. It could be some sort of automation to, you know, collect emails or whatever it is and be like, oh, wow, I should really do that. So Charlie started getting really into budgeting and started looking into a couple things. That's kind of got me into it as well.
I have not used budgeting apps. As you know, I'm very well versed in Excel spreadsheets and very comfortable in them. So we'll just kind of go in and do rough estimates in an Excel sheet and kind of keep up with that every so often.
I do a combination of each where I have, you know, the Mint app and some other things as well. And then I put it all into Excel to get more granular with it and actually project things out, like, you know, a lot of things that come up. And so just to take a step back here. So I think it actually is really easy to get into this and extremely beneficial. The type of insights that you get with data that's available right now to you is impactful. Like it really, the way that it puts it and visualizes it really can help you see what you're spending, what you can work on, and just, you know, have it all done in a much easier way than you may think, even in Excel. So really to start, the first thing I'll say, which is a brief thing, I learned a lot of this actually from Reddit. Once again, there's a subreddit called Personal Finance, which is huge. And there's a bunch of different offsets of personal finance as well that it will actually, you know, get into more specific things. There's probably one just for budgeting, investing, asset management, things of that nature. There's so many you can get to from there. But personal finance is solid if you are interested in trying to up your game in personal finance or get started. It's a very approachable. There's a lot of guides. But going back to Mint, which I think is kind of the crux of really making this easy and automated, and one of the best platforms for it. In Office alluded to the reason why, but Mint is free. You go on Mint and you just hook in all of your different credit cards, you know, bank accounts. If you have business bank accounts, asset management, you can hook all of those.
Oh,
in.
Actually, notice there that I actually did log into Mint a couple weeks ago, and it's because I lost my wallet. And since I lost it, I had all these different cards in it, my you know, business card, my like normal debit card, all the different credit cards. And when I lost it originally, I was like, okay, I knew when I last had it, I should be able to find it. And it's an easy way to just log into the platform and then quickly see at a glance all of your statements and just see if there's balances that are awry out of nowhere. Without me having to go and be like, oh, let me log into Wells Fargo, then let me log into Chase, and then let me log into whatever. All of it's sort of there at one glance, which I think was like super useful feature. You don't need to worry about having to check on every single platform to know what's going on.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things with Mint. So if once you make the free account with Mint, you hook in everything, it aggregates all of your spending into one easy to see feed. It has everything broken up for you, your investments, the types of accounts. You can add in assets as well. If you own a home, a car, that'll be listed there and it'll track your net worth. So it's extremely powerful for tracking. And a great example there from Nofis where if you lose some cards because it's hooked into your actual accounts, you'll still be able to see data from those accounts because it's not card-based, it's account-based. Once you hook in all of your accounts, and you need to do this if you want to utilize this as soon as possible to start getting data over time that you can start leveraging and making it easy for budgeting. So Mint is really good for a lot of reasons there. But why a lot of people like Mint for budgeting And I don't use this feature myself, and I'll get into the way I actually use it. But once you have all of the data hooked in, Mint will categorize all of your spending in different categories for you automatically. And you can change them if they're wrong. So like when you go out to eat to restaurants, it might say dining or restaurants or something of that nature. And then it'll say, hey, you know, in June you spent, you know, $300 on restaurants. And it's like, on average, we see that you really are spending $200. Your budget should be XYZ, and this is how much you're spending. So it automates that whole process for you using their, you know, their system. And you can then also specify it, you know, to say, hey, actually, I want the budget to be this based on XYZ. And then it'll just do all of this automatically for you. So it's an awesome way to get started with budgeting in a very easy fashion just by hooking in data that's available to you already. There's ways to do this also more automated. Like You Need a Budget is also another platform a lot of people use. And we're not going to go over that today. But if you do like that concept and you want something a little bit more granular, that is something to look at. But with Mint, it is definitely what I use is kind of the core here. Gary, going back to what you said, I'm with you. I think that Excel sheets, for me, you know, I use Excel a lot for work, but I think there are a lot of solutions out there that make budget tracking even more impactful, and it's not as hard as it may sound. So what I personally do is I use an Excel template that I found that is essentially a budget tracking sheet. And also has a net worth tracker as well, Nofis, that kind of does the same thing that you were looking at before. And it's from a website called themeasureofaplan.com. And we'll have this all linked in our show notes as well, so anyone can use this. But essentially, it's a free Excel sheet that you can download. It's a template where all you do is you put in all of your different transactions. All you need is the date, the amount of the transaction, and you make categories within the Excel sheet. And it's all super easy. The guy that made this, I mean, he did a phenomenal job. It's like dummy proof. If you've used Excel ever, you can figure this out. And there's guides on his website as well. We'll have it all linked. But the way that I use Mint is I use Mint to aggregate all of my data so I don't have to go into, you know, all the different banks and export everything. Although I did have to do that the first time just to get my historical data. So you may need to do that. Now that I have Mint set up and I know the categories, I just export it every month. I put in this budget tracker sheet. And this template gives me so much data, like all the categories. I can see trends from what I've spent the last 3 months, 6 months, year over year, month over month. I have my budget set. It's giving me so much information that I already had, and even through Mint. But the way that this Excel sheet does it is next level, and I don't even have to try. It's just copy and pasting simple cells in Excel that I already have available to me for Mint. So it's been huge for me. I know, Nofis, you've tried it, although it's been a few months. But I remember when I first showed that to you, kind of what were your impressions there? Do you think I'm describing it right, that it is maybe not as intimidating as it looks and that the template is accessible?
I think so. Like, so I guess this is where my thought goes to it is I think it's accessible. I also have no major issues with my finances where I feel like I get anxious looking at this stuff. I've just kind of got, I'm like primed to feel comfortable with it and kind of going through the motions. So like where my mind goes,
must be nice.
But where my mind first goes to is like, I don't think that's the case for everyone. I think sometimes with a lot of people they might get anxious about really diving into their finances for the first time and, you know, book some time with yourself to start doing this on a certain day. Allocate the time for it and just say, okay, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to make a Mint account and then I'm going to start adding all of my accounts in. Then over the next week, maybe just start observing what Mint is showing you and like start feeling comfortable about where your spending categories are, depending on how you feel. Again, some people might feel more anxious about going through these motions because they don't, you know, have the knowledge there. And other people might be like, oh, this is super easy. Let me go ahead and download this, you know, budget tracker Excel sheet that Charlie provides and then go through those motions. Now I immediately downloaded it was probably about a month or two after Charlie had sent it to me. It was in my Gmail for a while sitting there starred. And then I finally downloaded it, went through the motions. And I told Charlie, I was like, oh yeah, I did this all in like a weekend and it was no problem. I think I was like also getting prepared for all my taxes. So I kind of, you know, knocked both of those things out at the same time, and it didn't really take a lot of time. Though I'm pretty comfortable moving around in Excel. So if you're not, I would say just again, spend some time going through the motions. If you're not comfortable with Excel, Google little things that make you feel more comfortable or how you do things. But honestly, I think the way it works is really straightforward. I don't think it's a problem. Yeah. I think it's just maybe some people might need to ease into this. And as you ease into it, it's going to give you that awareness. And as you get more awareness, you'll feel more comfortable and make it more of a routine.
I think I would be inclined to manually put the stuff into the Excel sheet. You said that's free, right? It's just like a thing you download on that website. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So the template's free, Mint is free.
I mean, the one thing, and maybe this is just my paranoia coming out, but like with Mint, you have a login. It seems like kind of you're linking all your financial institutions, your credit card, your bank, everything to that. It seems like there would be security concerns with that if somebody, because the full account information's in there, right? So if somebody were to gain access to, that would be a pretty big problem, sounds like, right?
What would be if someone were to gain access, they would be able to see how much money you have
or don't have,
or, you know, what transactions that were, or don't have, or transactions that are occurring, your assets, right? So they would gain knowledge on your finances. They would not have access to your account numbers. Your account numbers and information, when you're hooking into the APIs of all the platforms, you have to have a secure login, a one-time secure login, just to kind of make that connection, like with anything that you integrate. And what's cool too with Mint is you can also hook in things like 401ks, investment accounts, and everything like that. It's a very easy way to track it. A lot of the 401k like websites are very old school and don't have a lot of great functionality, so Mint makes that easier. But yeah, if someone were to get access to that, they would get a lot more information on you. Mint is one of those websites, because it's financial in nature, that there are a lot of security login features enabled, you know, more so than like your typical website. So, you know, if you use those features, if you leverage them, if you have good password management, a nice password manager, perhaps, like we've talked about in previous episodes, you know, you can actually, you know, I think it's less of a concern. Yeah, Mint is a really good way to kind of bridge the gap between like exporting everything manually from every financial service you have into an Excel sheet, into just having that done for you already, then doing that. Or if you're not comfortable with Excel, just use Mint. That's what millions of people do. They use Mint, they make a budget in there. But if you want to take it next level, if you like those insights, I would say I honestly find it fun. You know, maybe it's just because I'm nerdy, but like I like going in there, putting in all my data, having everything update for me very easy. And the stuff I've learned about my spending and just how to change it, it's been impactful immediately. And it didn't even feel hard. It's just like, I didn't know that I was doing that. Now I know. It's like, okay, great. I can change that. It's just being better informed. And really that information is what makes it a lot more powerful and really affects your budgeting and your spending. Yeah, that's a very similar concept to, I think, kind of the way Mint does it in terms of the transactions and categories, but it more accessible when everyone's in their email. So yeah, I think that's very comparable there and a very easy way to do it.
To wrap it up here, if you're not, again, budgeting, I think we all implore you guys to jump in and do so. If you're not super comfortable with it, take it step at a time. And again, awareness will, you know, essentially bridge you into more consistency. But ultimately, you guys know the drill here. You know, we're on Not To Be Technical on Instagram. As usual, please go ahead and reach out to us, engage, let us know if you've got any cool trending topics that you're interested in, that you'd like us to discuss. And don't forget to give us a review, maybe on Apple Podcasts. We're out here, we're trying to grow the podcast. And ultimately, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode and stay tuned for episode 11 coming next week.